Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, welcome back. Upstate Outdoors is on your radio, 106.3 WRD. Philip Gentry and Boat Girl, and we just, last hour, we wrapped up talking to Jim Shockey.
That's such a big deal. Yeah. I try not to be starstruck, but, well, dang.
And I've never met the man in person, but, wow, what a down-to-earth guy.
Very much so.
Just really down-to-earth.
Just, that was awesome.
Strikingly down to
very earth. Very humble and very just a cool guy all the way around,
and just, you know, I mean, hey, yeah, I go hunting,
yeah,
been doing it for a long time,
yeah, no joke.
So
I wish we would have got to talk to him a minute about his choice of headwear.
Yeah,
I mean, I know there's other important things that we needed to talk about.
Why, you like his cowboy hat?
Yes, I
you
do.
You like the bandanas?
I do. I like the cowboy hat.
Yeah, yeah. That's his signature deal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool though.
Well, if you missed the first hour, you need to go to our podcast, which you can do at 1063wrd.radio.com. I don't know. It kind of varies. Sometimes it's a little while. Sometimes it's a long while after the show.
Sometime this evening.
But catch the podcast definitely in hour one. They break the podcast down into 2 hours. So listen to both. When you listen to one, you'll be like, man, I'm going to go ahead and listen to both.
Might as well listen to both of them.
Yeah, that's right. So because you don't want to miss the Upstate Outdoors blog talking about last chance for Canada goose hunting. But you certainly don't want to miss the interviews with Jim Shockey.
Y'all just don't want to miss anything.
No, you don't want to miss anything. And speaking of not want to miss, this hour, we're going to give you 5 bank fishing tips that you need to know. Maybe you don't need to know them right now because it's kind of cold and muddy and windy and rainy. But, hey, if that's what you want to do, knock yourself out. We'll help you all we can. But most of these are probably geared more for a little summertime, a little warmer.
A little bit warmer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's only stopped raining for a minute. I mean, it's obviously decent.
And now
day,
and then the wind's going to blow.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then we got a fishing report for you coming up with Captain Steve Petrakowski, Fishkey Business. And Steve is a Lake Hartwell. I think this time of year he's fishing on Lake Joe Cassie, which you can't blame him because Joe Cassie doesn't get as muddy
as
Lake Hartwell and some of these other lower lakes have been. And then we're going to wrap up today's show with our calendar of events, which if you heard the first hour and you're really interested in the Jim Shockey Classic, we'll give you that information again. And then wrap up today's show with our parting shot about a kid who took a needle fish in the neck.
Ow.
Yeah, I got hit in the neck with a baseball one time when I was a kid. That didn't feel good.
No.
I can't imagine what a needle fish would feel like. No. But right now, we got to jump in the kitchen.
So we have been trying to eat healthy, and we've actually been doing really good with it, but sometimes you just want some soul food.
So you want somebody else to eat bad.
Some comfort food. And so there is no better comfort food than chicken fried venison cube steak with gravy.
What a little chicken fried.
I was hoping you would sing that.
Yeah.
So what you're going to need is 3/4 cup of all-purpose flour, a teaspoon and a quarter of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of ground pepper, and 1 pound of venison steak. Obviously, we like the cube steak because it's already tenderized. So, and then 3 tablespoons of oil for frying. For the gravy, you're going to need 2 tablespoons of butter and some of the pan drippings, 2 more tablespoons of flour, 1 cup of milk at room temperature or just slightly warm. You get it cold. If you got pour ice cold milk in it, you get lumpy gravy. And then salt and pepper. So in a small bowl, mix together the flour, the salt, and the pepper. You can throw a dash of Lowry's or paprika if you want a little bit of heat on it or a little bit more something. I mean, you can use your judgment on that. You dust the cube steaks with the flour mixture. And then you can use a meat mallet, but I kind of like to just squish it in there. So you dust them, and then you kind of squish on them to where you're getting that flour mixture kind of in the indentations in the cube steak. And then you roll them over in the flour again. So you kind of like double flour them. You squish it all in there, and then you flour it again. So you heat the oil in a large, I like an iron skillet, over medium heat, and fry them up. Fry them until golden brown, roughly 3 to 5 minutes aside, because cube steak is pretty thin. It needs to be about a quarter of an inch, and that's about perfect. So when the cube steaks are done, you can put them on a paper towel, put them in a warm oven just to keep them warm. On the gravy part, you're gonna need to let the pan cool off just a little bit, and then when the grease drippings and the meat drippings, measure those out. As long as everything equals about 2 tablespoons with the butter and the drippings, you're not using that much oil here, so you're just going to have to add some butter to that. About 2 tablespoons of dripping slash butter. Heat the pan back up to medium. Once the butter has melted, you add in 2 tablespoons of flour. The seasoned flour that you've used to coat the cube steaks with is best. It gives your gravy a better flavor. You stir the flour until it's all damp and bubbly. So with the milk, you're going to need to add it slow. So you're going to add a little milk, and you're going to stir. And then you're going to add a little more milk, and then you're going to stir. So you're going to keep adding until your gravy thickens up, but slightly thinner than the consistency that you want it, because when it cools off a little bit, it'll thicken up. So then add salt and pepper to the gravy to taste, and then you take the cube steak out of the warming oven and throw the gravy on top of it and eat it up with some homemade mashed potatoes or
and
some
biscuits.
Macaroni and cheese
and some biscuits.
Yeah.
And tell us how it was. I tell you, my favorite way to cube steak in and of itself, without all the other stuff, is fairly healthy, especially when I get to cook it on my new designer appliance.
The GF.
The Giorgio Formani.
Which, in my terms, is George Foreman. I mean, grilled cube steak is pretty good.
Yeah.
But they ain't nothing like chicken fried cube steak.
Nah.
I mean, so because I'm hungry, I'm just going to talk about all this delicious food and hope y'all try it, because we're going to have broccoli.
Yeah. Ain't nothing wrong with broccoli. So it's just, it's one of those things.
We'll fry some. I mean, obviously we don't want to eat it every week or every day, but we'll fry some up soon, because both of us really enjoy this recipe.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do it with vegetables instead of mashed potatoes.
Are you ready for a cheat day? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not ready for a cheat day yet. But according to the recipe, it only has 348 calories per serving.
Yeah.
That's not too bad at all. But a serving is probably just a little bitty piece on this recipe for 300 calories with all that flour and oil and stuff in it.
Oh, well, hey, somebody's got to eat that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So, cube steak, and we got a bunch of cube steak.
We do.
Matter of fact, we've been eating so much venison here lately that I'm kind of wondering about our stocks. And because there ain't nothing else you can do. I mean, you go to the grocery store in January 1st, grocery store closes.
Exactly. And, I think we could do better as far as being more creative with our cuts of meat and our recipes, and we're getting to that.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of great recipes out there that we're trying, and that's why we're sharing them with y'all.
We'll have to eat a whole lot more fish tacos, because that's hopefully if the...
Oh, I love some fish tacos.
We'll get some fish tacos. So, speaking of fish tacos, we're going to go to our break now. When we come back, we're going to give you 5 bank fishing tips to get that main ingredient for your fish tacos.
Y'all stay with us right here, 106.3 WORD.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, well, wired to fish Sportsmanlife.com brings us our topic of discussion for this segment. It's an article that was written by Walker Smith back in 2013, but I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think there's been a whole lot of advancements in bank fishing since...
A long time. Right.
So,
and everybody asks us this.
Yeah. Well, you know? More so it's like, where's a good place to bank fish? So let's talk about how to, and then we can give you some where to. I can. So a lot of us grew up, I know I did, I don't remember my first fish, but I'm sure I caught it off the bank of Lake Hartwell, fishing on Lake Hartwell. I do remember where both my kids' first fish were caught.
Where?
Clay's was caught at Lake Hartwell at Portman Marina.
Off the dock?
Off the dock, yeah. And Will's was caught off the dock down at Lake Robinson up in
Greer.
Really? Yep. So anyway, so we got five tips if you're a bank fisherman. And number one is to wear dark clothing. And
I would have never thought about this, but I agree.
Well, if you're bank fishing on the watershed up there, you know, in northern Greenville County where you're not supposed to, dark clothing has a lot of benefit.
Like you would know anything
about
that.
If you jump over the gate and slide, nah.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah.
The dark clothing is actually, it may not be the most comfortable in summertime, but you don't want anything bright because you are, you know, you're fishing right there, you know, within a cast of where you're standing. And so you're going to create a silhouette that, could
right,
possibly
so they can't
spook
tell
the
you're
fish.
There.
And, you know, fish have a lot better eyesight than people give them credit for.
Right.
So, you know, just kind of keep that in mind. And number two goes hand in hand with that. Keep your distance from the water. Now, that sounds really strange.
Sort of, yeah.
But I have this was never better illustrated to me than I have a Facebook friend who used to live up here in Greenville. Actually, I think he worked for the sheriff's department, and he moved down to Florida. And he does most of his fishing is done from the bank.
I'm talking trophy fishing.
Yeah, yeah. And he's chasing. He likes to chase a lot of different fish. And I was watching. He shoots a video of himself, and it's some really cool stuff. And one of the things I noticed when he's fishing, he walks up, and he's a good 10 or 15 yards from the water's edge when he makes his cast. And more often than not, I mean, you know, you're talking about, you don't want to walk up and cast all the way across the pond because right there where you're fixing to get in the water, you
there
know,
may
might
be something sitting right there.
Yeah, might be sitting right there. And you walk up and first thing you see is, psh,
okay,
you spook it.
So when you put your tackle bag down and bucket or whatever,
yep,
do it away from the bank. Cast away from the bank. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I get that now.
So, I mean, you might be standing, like I said, 10 or 15 yards, and you're just casting right there. And, then, of course, then you're going to work your way up. You've worked that area. You're going to work your way up and start going you know, to the other places. So, number three is start with quiet finesse techniques. Now, that kind of flies in the face of what a lot of folks do because they, you know, a lot of folks will think about, well, I want to pick off the most aggressive fish first, so they start with something noisy topwater. But kind of in the same vein, if you're approaching that fish that's right there in front of you, you know, you don't want to go all the way to the water's edge.
You need to be subtle.
But, yeah, you know, most bait in nature is not, you know, something gaudy or flashy or noisy. It's just a little something, okay? And fish are attuned to feeding on just a little disturbance, you know, a cricket or, you know, whatever flies in the water. And we always think we're talking about fishing from the bank, you know, freshwater fishing in a pond, and it's going to be brim and bass, right?
Right.
But, you know, these tips can work, you know, saltwater or, like I said, even, you know, if you have the opportunity to go down to Florida and fish in some of that
canal waters
and stuff like that. I mean, who knows what's swimming in there?
I know somebody that caught the biggest tarpon they ever caught in a ditch behind the Walmart.
Yeah.
Like the wifey had gone in for groceries and stuff, and he cast it in a ditch, a drainage canal behind the Walmart.
Wow.
Biggest tarpon he ever caught.
In one of them water retention places, or
it was
just
in a canal cut.
In a canal cut.
I think
cut.
It was some kind of water retention. It was a ditch.
Oh,
drainage
wow.
ditch. Well, no, crazy, isn't it?
Number four is keep your bait in the strike zone as long as possible. Now, you know, in casting angles is very important here when you're fishing out of a boat on bigger waters, but it's even more critical when you're fishing from the shore because there's always a good population of, you know, possibility of there being fish around you. And when you're talking about casting angles, you know, a lot of folks will walk up to the water's edge, and then they're gonna throw straight out as far as they can. Well, if you think about it, in most bank fishing situations, your cover is going to be along the shoreline. So your casting angles, you know, you want to cast to your far left. You know, just do it methodically.
Well, I mean, if you're fishing from a boat, you know, chances are a lot of times you're going to be casting towards the bank.
Yeah.
So, you know, bank fishing, you're on the bank. So you still need to be towards the bank.
Yeah. And if you're, again, I'm kind of referring to a pond here, but no matter where you are, usually you're going to, if you cast straight out, you're going to be casting into deeper water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, we're also kind of taking the liberty here saying, okay, we're going to be using artificial baits.
Right.
So, you know, if you're using live bait and it's summertime, then maybe that's what you want to do. Maybe you want your first cast to be straight out and into the deepest water that you can find and leave it there. You know, because a lot of folks live bait fish. But if you're fishing artificials, the best way to keep your bait in a strike zone is to keep it in that kind of shallow cover-laden water for as long as possible. And then number five kind of goes hand-in-hand with that. If there is a lack of cover, you want to watch for environmental cues as to where fish might be holding.
Okay.
And you know, so you always think about, okay, a blowdown or a stump, but a lot of times those aren't around. You know, those have been cleared out. And there are two specific environmental cues to look for when you're bank fishing, and that's going to be wind and shade.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, wind is going to ripple the water and is going to keep the fish from seeing you.
Right.
You know, and so that's kind of going to be a barrier. It's going to be kind of camouflage for you. And shade is the same thing because a lot of fish are looking, you know, overhanging cover or whatever, or, you know, shade from anything. And that's where they're going to be holding.
That makes sense, too.
In that shady spot. So, and then as far as, you know, a lot of folks, like we were talking about, say, okay, well, where do I go and fish? You know, number one, you can always go to the DNR website.
And there's a list.
They have an entire list of their fishing piers, you know, public fishing piers. And those are usually.
You do not want to trespass on people's property bank fishing.
But
there are lots of places on their website.
And those have been prepared for you, and a lot of them have structure out around them. So that would be where I would point you to. Go to the DNR website, to the closest lake to you, and go wet a line. So
yeah, take your kids.
Take your kids with you. All right, well, we're going to go to our break. When we come back, we're going to ring up our old pal, Captain Steve Petrakowski, and get a fishing report.
Y'all stay with us right here, 106.3 WORD.
Sounds good.
All right, welcome back. Upstate Outdoors is on your radio, and we got some fishing reports, believe it or not. I mean, a lot of folks here in the Upstate are like,
it's a little tough right now.
Where can I go to catch fish? And, you know, our position is, hey, we'll call Captain Steve Petrakowski and find out where he's fishing. So, Steve, welcome back to Upstate Outdoors.
Thanks for having me again.
And, you know, Steve, your home lake that you fish most of the time is Lake Hartwell. Is that still going to be a good producer for you now, or are we moving around?
Well, I'd say give it a week or two and let things settle down. We had a lot of rain last week, and it made the lake turn from fishable to it's still fishable, and a lot of people like colored situations for muddy situations and having high water. You know, the lake fish really good for bass at that
right.
time of year. And so that, you know, it is a good condition for some people, and it doesn't wipe everything out. You know, fish do move around. It just kind of, on my end of it, things spread out a little bit, and it takes it, you know, maybe a couple days or a week just to kind of settle down from you know, the chaos of the lake going up and all the water that just came in the whole system. My arms are sore. I've been throwing cast nets for 3 days, try to catch bait for 3 days. So that's been what I'd assume what the Hartwell fishing would be too, just a little spread out, but still doable. You know, this weekend might be a little tricky, but I'd assume by next week we should be right back in the swing of things on Lake Hartwell.
It's got to let it calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
It is muddy.
Yeah. And speaking of that, how far, I mean, Boat Girl and I, we focus a lot of our efforts on Lake Greenwood, which is
past muddy.
Which is past muddy, and also a lot of debris in the lake, which is pretty typical of a river system. Is that a precaution that people need to take on Lake Hartwell? Was there a lot of debris floating out in the lake?
Oh, yeah, there is. You definitely want to pay attention, especially when it's a little choppy out. It could be a 4-foot section of a stump that's been sitting on the shore, and then when the lake rises, it washes off. And so you really have to be on all the lakes around here. I was on Joe Cassie yesterday, and you know, you pull up the lake and look down, and you say, "Oh my gosh, I can see the bottom." That's where you need to go if you want to fish clear water right now,
yeah.
Or clearer water. It doesn't get affected on the, you know, the mud like the lower lakes, I guess. But you know, anyways, yeah, you have to be very careful. I saw floating debris out on Joe Cassie, and I've been on Hartwell the last 3 afternoons trying to catch bait for my upcoming week on fishing. And there's stuff, you know, here and there and everywhere, you know, old buckets. So definitely keep your eyes open a little bit more than, you know, you might in the past, I guess. That's definitely safety. Safety comes first. I guess you want to be able to do it again and not hurt your equipment.
Right. Now, if we're talking about Lake Joe Cassie, what are you catching this time of year, and what are the patterns?
You know, it's still on my winter pattern. I love it up there in the winter and advertised for my January, February, March. And yesterday, my group, I had four on the boat, and I caught a 4-man limit of bass, and we caught two nice keeper trout, and then turned probably 10, 12, 15 other smaller fish loose as well that you know, weren't big enough, and of course we hit our limit. So it's 5 per person up there. So that's what we caught, and I like my live bait fishing because it gives an opportunity for somebody to interact with getting a bite and setting a hook and doing that. A lot of guys troll for the trout up there, but you know, you've been up there with me, and we've done a live bait deal years ago, and I've since kind of honed down on a lot of my techniques up there over the years, and just love it up there. It's beautiful, number one. And then, you know, I get off from fishing on my Hartwell all year long and all summer, and then get up to Joe Cassie for a couple months, and I don't run bunches and bunches of trips up there, but you know, I'm up there, you know, once to 3 times a week, and it gives me a little break to see a little bit different scenery and catch some different fish, it's good stuff. Wintertime's the time to go up there and do the live bait fishing.
That is, I mean, Joe Cassie is beautiful any time of year, and a lot of folks go to see the waterfalls, but to me, Joe Cassie is more beautiful in the wintertime when the leaves are off the trees. And then you want to talk about waterfalls, man. They are full flowing.
They're probably going right now.
They're full flowing right now.
Yeah, we pulled away from the dock, and I looked at everybody. I said, "Well, I know something that's going to be excellent today." And they all looked at me like, "Well, you know, what is it?" I said, "Well, waterfalls."
Yeah,
it won't nobody. They won't nobody be there, and they're going to be beautiful.
Yeah. So I did. I mean, we actually fished, you know, close to a couple of them at one time or another, just to kind of see them, if it resembled a small drainage, it was a waterfall yesterday. I guess waterfalls where you've never seen waterfalls before.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the trout fishing up there. Is it just me and my experience, or does it seem like the trout are, I mean, I've seen a lot of big trout coming out of the lake that I haven't seen in the last 4 or 5 years.
I don't know. I mean, I've had a good year. I don't ever, over the past few years, that the trout bite for me is kind of slowly tapered off to where I don't quite do the numbers where I did years ago. But the last this year's been excellent on me for catching. I'm waiting on a trout bite or two or three. If I can get any one of those bites and hook that fish and get at the boat, you know, that's it's a great day for me, because usually those fish are 3.5-4 pounds on the minimum, and they get, you know, 4 or 5 pounds when you do get one to the boat. So it's worth waiting for that bite. It's like fishing for that 20-pound striper when you hook it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so what, you know, that's the exciting part. But what fills in the rest of the day is kind of nonstop action for me. You know, sometimes I'll pull in an area and pull on several bass and then ease out to the deeper water to try for that trout. Sometimes they're mixed together, and sometimes you have to bend a rod for a little bit and then ease off and get the hours of boredom for minutes of excitement type of deal. But it's just on that end of it, it's been a good year for me. Like I said, we caught two yesterday, and they were both close to 4 pounds. I know we had one really big trout bite. You can tell on the bait when it comes in, versus a bass bite that might be scraped
right
on a trout bite that almost looks like a gar bite, because a trout has little, I call them pin teeth almost. Yeah. You don't want to lip a trout, because you'll cut your hand for sure. And so you can tell what the bait looks like when you get it to the boat if you miss that fish. And I know it was definitely a big trout bite. Before my honeymoon, I just went on a honeymoon. Before the honeymoon, I was up there, and we went 5 for 7 keeper trout that we had on. Then I had at least two other fish that I thought were trout that we just pulled the hook on. I said, man, I can't remember the last time I've been up here and had that many large trout bites. It was a day that I think was going to be, I don't know, 24 degrees in the morning. And Philip, you were up there when it was that cold one day, and my trolling motor didn't deploy because it was frozen.
Yep.
You remember doing that. And
didn't we have to pee on it to get it to work?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah, twice.
But anyways, we actually waited. And I like my mornings up there. I like the first couple hours of daylight and the last couple hours in the evening. But it was just going to be too cold to do it, and the guys had to fish that day. We couldn't move it around, so we decided to wait midday and just make the best of it. And that was that day that we went 5 for 7. We left the lake like we were peacocks. You know, we were so excited. We had such a good day. And plus, on top of those trout, we were catching bass as well. So it was just one of those magical days that you get every once in a while when you fish.
Awesome.
So,
We've been talking with Captain Steve Petrakowski of Fishkey Business Guide Service, Lake Hartwell, Lake Joe Cassie. So, Steve, if folks want to get in touch with you and line up a fishing trip on either one of those lakes, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, call me, even better, text me. And that number is 864-353-3438. It's easy nowadays to Google stuff, I guess, just Fishkey Business. Got online booking now, and you don't even have to get me on the telephone, where you can get on my website at fishkey.info and book online. So that's a couple different ways to do it. So
awesome.
That's awesome.
All right, Steve, well, thanks for being on the show with us. You folks want to have a good time, and I'm not necessarily talking about peeing on the trolling motor. You probably don't do that every time, but there'll be something exciting, I can promise you that. You need to give Steve a call.
Definitely. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care, bud.
Thanks.
Y'all, thanks for having me again.
All righty.
I can't believe you said that on the air.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes it gets froze up, and then, you know, you got to do what you got to do to get it started.
He don't have a lick of sense.
You don't tell
pay
people
any
to do
attention.
That?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, now you did. You learned something new. We're going to go to a break now. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show with our calendar of events and today's parting shot, talking about fish that have teeth. Man, we got one. We got a story for you today.
Y'all stay with us right here, 106.3 WORD.
All right, well, the calendar of events is the last thing standing between us
Time flies.
Chuck and John on a great show today. So take it away, Boat Girl.
So tomorrow, February 16th, 9 a.m., is the next chance to shoot the mile range at the Clinton House Plantation in Clinton, South Carolina. Instruction will be provided by certified shooting instructors. Shooters must bring their own gun and ammo, and the cost is $50 for members and $75 for non-members. For more information, you can call the Clinton House Plantation and to register at 864-833-0274. Also, Friday, March 6th, is the 9th annual Memorial Outdoor Dream Foundation Spring Turkey Celebration. Evening of dinner, auction, and drawings featuring Dead End Game Calls founder and national turkey calling champion Mitchell Johnston.
Who's going to be a guest on the show next week.
Oh, cool. Can we get some turkey calling in? Can we get him to call on the show?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. This event will be held at Washington Baptist Church, which is located at 208 Washington Church Road in Pelzer. This event starts at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are $25. For more information and to purchase tickets, you can go to outdoordream.org, and that'll tell you everything you need to know. Also, Sunday and Monday, March 22nd and 23rd, is the 2020 Jim Shockey Classic Military Tribute to be held at Wild Dunes Resort. The two-day gathering honors those who protect our freedoms and aids in providing the U.S. and Canadian military personnel with once-in-a-lifetime hunts and fishing adventures. More than just a round of golf, the schedule of events taking place in the Isle of Palms, South Carolina Wild Dunes Resort, March 22nd, 23rd, includes the Jim Shockey meet and greet and charity auction evening, a military golf tournament on a picturesque 18-hole course, and post-golf awards barbecue dinner. There's a bunch of different packages available. You can register for the event at jimshockeyclassic.com. If y'all have an event you'd like to share with our listeners, you can contact us by email at upstateoutdoors@1063word.com.
And we'd appreciate it.
Yes, we would. We'll tell everybody.
Well, let's wrap up today's show with today's parting shot. Okay, today's parting shot comes from rare.us.
And it's gross.
Yeah, seen this before. It's a story about a teen who is stabbed in the neck by a needlefish while fishing. Now, I'm going to post this on our Facebook page. It's got a picture here. And, you know, you think about needlefish in South Carolina waters as being like a little bait fish kind of thing. Yeah. Nah, man, this thing looks like a barracuda with an extended jaw. And this joker, he got it bad. An Indonesian teenager suffered a gruesome freak accident while fishing in southern Indonesia. The accident ultimately required three surgeons and two anesthesiologists because it was real messed up. 16-year-old Muhammad Abdul took a needlefish to the throat, and it stayed there. I mean, it stayed impaled in his neck.
Stuck.
While he was fishing with his family in the waters near Wakanamba, somewhere in Indonesia, where they live, a school of needlefish began jumping out of the water. Now, one of the fish jumped into the boat and straight into Abdul's neck. The impact knocked him, apparently this was in salt water, because it knocked him into the ocean, but somehow he was able to swim back to the boat and more or less just kind of chill out while they sped him back to shore. And from there, he got out and walked. I'm talking about walked home with a needlefish stuck in his neck. And this joker from the picture looks like it's about 2 or 3 feet long.
Kids must be pretty tough there.
Yeah. Now, Abdul first went to a Southeast Sulawesi hospital, but they were like, how are you alive? And sorry, we're just not equipped to deal with this. We got to get you to a fancier hospital. And then he was transferred to a facility in Makassar and underwent emergency surgery. You think?
Wow.
The good thing is he's a lot better now. And there's a few things about the story that make it, I guess, unique. Somehow this accident was kind of lucky for him because if the fish had not stayed stuck in his neck, he would have bled out. Got into, you know, the carotid arteries and stuff there. So, you know, pretty lucky for him. And the number two thing is that needlefish around Indonesia kill people. There was a 10-year-old kid that was killed in, you know, back in 1977 while night fishing with his dad. That was in Hawaii. And he got a needlefish straight through the eye.
Holy cow.
Ew.
And
then,
right.
And then a Thai naval cadet was killed in 2018 after getting speared by one. So, man, who
They're
knew?
They're kind of dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I didn't know they were that big there.
Yep. So,
that's crazy.
You got to think about the first couple of minutes, you know, what's going through this kid's mind while this fish is like, you know, he's just
stuck.
Fishing and stuck in his neck and. Wow.
Man. And then he goes to the first hospital, and they're like, nah, we can't help you here. You need to go somewhere else.
He walked,
which is even crazier.
Yeah. So, you know, Boat Girls, she's a big bass fisherman, and you know, kids nowadays talk about, who was it? One of your acquaintances got a hook stuck in his head or something and came to weigh in, and they had...
Yeah, kid came to weigh in with a treble hook in his head like a trooper.
Yeah. Imagine.
And then I think they said they went to Chick-fil-A after that and then went to the doctor. It's like, look, you know, it's all good.
I don't think this Indonesian kid was going to Chick-fil-A.
Probably not.
With a needlefish stuck in his neck before he went to the doctor. But, you know, a little bit of difference.
Yeah, a little bit.
So you ever had one stuck in your bag? Didn't you get hooked in the back?
I hooked myself in the back with a bomber mullet in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah,
how'd you get it out?
Pliers.
Yourself?
I mean, you know, I was on my paddleboard. I was 4 miles away from anywhere, and I had to paddle back with a dang big old bomber mullet hanging out of my back. Well, I'd gotten it stuck in the mangroves, and I was trying to work it out because it was like a $9 lure.
Yeah.
And when I broke it free, of course, what happens? It comes springing at you, and it was coming right in my head. So I ducked, and it wound up kind of in my back. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was lovely.
So
That's the only time I've ever been stuck that was like, ow, bad.
Yeah. I've been stuck a bunch of times, but nothing.
Not bad.
Nothing past the barb. There was one time that I got a Eagle Claw light wire hook stuck between my teeth.
What?
Yeah.
How?
I was trying to bite it and bend the hook back in where it got bent out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, you were on the boat. You didn't know anything about it.
I know. I would have freaked out.
Yeah, you'd have freaked out. I got it out. So.
I tell him not to bite hooks and stuff all the time.
Well, hey, thanks for listening to today's show. Got to give a big shout out to our guest, Jim Shockey. And you guys, if you're golfers, man, you need to go check that out down at Isle of Palms, the Jim Shockey Classic.
And if you're not a golfer, just go for the auction and stuff the night before.
Absolutely. And also, big thanks to our captain for the Fishing Report, Steve Pietrzykowski with Fishkey Business. And, man, just a great day today. So y'all stay cool. Y'all stay warm out there. God bless, and we will see you next week.
See you next week right here, 106.3 WORD.